I want you to be thinking of the answer to a question. What is your most valuable possession? Your most prized possession. What would that be? As you think about that question, a lot of different answers come to mind, and I wanted to maybe help you understand what makes something valuable or special to us. I mean, if you had to pick one, you may pick something that's very expensive. You know, a lot of times you save up money, and you finally get to buy something very special to you. You know, something that costs a nickel or a dime, you can throw that away and not lose sleep over it. But if it's a nice car you restored, or maybe something you put a lot of money into, a musical instrument or something else, might have some value there. Maybe not just expensive, maybe something valuable to you is something you would find irreplaceable. Like maybe your grandmother gave you something before she died, and you know it's the only thing that she has left for you, and so it's very special to you. It may not have even cost anything, but having that memento, a picture, a photograph, a note, it may be special to you because it's irreplaceable. It could be something that you really find indispensable. When I say indispensable, it's something that you wouldn't want to do without, or you feel like you couldn't. I got Anna one of those Dyson handheld vacuums. And you've never seen someone so excited to have things on the floor that need vacuumed up. She loves that thing. And when the battery dies, she's crestfallen until it's ready to charge and go again. She loves that thing. And it's not super expensive, and it's not super special, but it's indispensable. Like, I really like this thing. So what would be that for you? What would be your most prized possession? I would challenge you this morning that the most special thing you own is your faith. I want to tell you a passage up here from 1 Peter 1, and we'll jump right in the middle of the text. Peter says, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Notice what he says there on the screen. Your faith that's more precious than gold. You know, if you found in your yard a giant treasure chest of gold, you would think, this is pretty special. And if you were thinking about the answer to the question, and you had a treasure chest full of gold, I know what you'd be thinking. That gold treasure chest is pretty sweet. I wouldn't want to do without that. I mean, it's worth tens of thousands of dollars. Surely nothing I possess is better than that. Well, Peter tells us there's something you own that is more precious than gold. And he said, that's your faith. Now, why would your faith be more precious than gold? Well, because notice the last part of the verse. If you possess that faith, a genuine saving faith, he says you're going to be found to see the result of that faith. And the result of it is praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, we normally associate those three words, praise and glory and honor, for God and Jesus. And rightly so. They deserve those things. But you know, there's a day coming in which Jesus is going to give that to you. You're going to be given praise, and you're going to be given glory, and you're going to be given honor. And if you think that verse is not saying that, go flip over to Romans chapter 2 and verse 10, where he talks about that based on our life, God is going to reward those that seek eternal life with glory and honor and immortality. I mean, those sorts of things, glory and honor, we get that because of our faith. You know what's so difficult about faith? You can't see it. It's not a tangible thing that you can go and dig up in the ground or say you possess. If your house is burning down, you can't go grab it and leave with it. Faith is one of those things that it's very challenging to know if you possess it or to know how much of it you have. But I'm going to tell you, you want it. You need it. You have to have it. And we need it for a lot of reasons. One reason is, well, what I want to talk to you about this morning. I mean, for many of us, it's almost spring break. You may be planning a trip to go somewhere. And there are a lot of commercials on TV about fun places you could go visit. But I don't know if you saw a picture of this stormy ocean beach thing. You might not say to yourself, man, I can't wait to head there. That is where I want to be. I mean, right in the middle of that, you get kind of dark or getting dark. That seems like a good time. I want to go there. And yet, you know what all of you just did? You sang to me. Almost every one of you, I was looking around. All of y'all were singing, man, I'd go anywhere with Jesus. I'd go anywhere with Jesus. Anywhere with Jesus, I can safely go. Now, I'm going to tell you this morning, the lesson we're going to talk about from Mark chapter 4 is about a group of people that thought they'd go anywhere with Jesus. And then they ended up in a situation like that. And they thought to themselves, this is not working out at all. I don't want to be here. And I'm not sure being here with Jesus is going to make this thing work out well either. What the story is going to be this morning, we study together, is about the time when Jesus stilled the sea or calmed the storm, however you want to refer to it. And we're going to read that text. But the reason we're going to read it is because we're going to visibly see people's faith in action. We're going to see if someone possesses the quality of faith that is going to be found a result in praise and honor and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And in those moments, we're going to be able to put ourselves in that boat right alongside His disciples, and we're going to be able to ask ourselves that question, do I possess the most valuable thing I could possess? Do I have faith in Jesus Christ? Go ahead and turn me to Mark chapter 4, and let's just read the text together. Just a handful of verses, starting in verse 35. He said, on that day when evening came, he said to them, let us go over to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. And Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, hush, be still. And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? They became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Here we find, in a situation, Jesus posing this question to them. Where's your faith? Have you still no faith? What's going on with your faith? Now, you might say to yourself, well, if I was there with Jesus, there's no way. I'd be singing that song, man. Anywhere with Jesus, I am not afraid. But let me just tell you, I don't know if that's the case. You know, the story takes place where most of Jesus' ministry does, the Sea of Galilee. Now, I haven't been there, but I know several people have. If you want to taste some water from the Sea of Galilee, Debbie says she got some. And so they went to visit. Remember, they went to the Holy Land, and they imported some of that Galilean water. And it looks pretty, doesn't it? It's a very special place. Very unique, and I've got some things we'll talk about on there. But it's not super big, and the boats that people are in weren't super big either. When you think about the type of boat that Jesus would have been in to go onto the other side, it would be something that looks like this. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, they found a boat from the bottom of the Sea of Galilee that was roughly that same size. And it was dated back to literally the time when Jesus would have been on the Sea of Galilee. And it had like stuff in it, like pottery and other things. They could really date it back to that time. And so you could see, I mean, the hull of that ship. You go back to this other picture, and I mean, it was equipped with a sail in the middle. Because if it's windy, I don't want to be rowing. But if it's not windy, they still had like four little places where you could put oars and kind of row if you needed to row and get where you were going. But as you look at that, you think, well, it's not super big. And it's not that long. I think maybe just 20 feet or something, maybe a little bit longer. And you think about waves hitting that. Well, that's not going to end well. I remember when I moved to Georgia, one of the first things I did was I got my canoe and said, I'm going to Lake Lanier. This gift of God, I'm standing here today. Because you're out on Lake Lanier in a canoe. I mean, you got jet skis circling you like sharks, and you got big boats with people partying, and the waves are rough out there. And your canoe, get a little bit of wind, and it starts rocking. You think, well, this is no fun place to be. But let me tell you, the Sea of Galilee is 1,000 times worse than that. When you think about the Sea of Galilee, I mean, it's weird because when you think of sea, you think of the Gulf of Mexico or something like that. And Jesus is in a boat crossing the Gulf of Mexico. The Sea of Galilee is not like that. It's a picture of it there on a satellite, and you can see, it's just a very small body of water. But it's super important. I mean, most of Jesus' ministry, the miracles, the Sermon on the Mount, all these things happen around various parts of this lake. That's what they call it today. I mean, it's a lake. It's a lot smaller than Lake Lanier. It's 13 miles by 8 miles across, I think, at its furthest point. And so whenever you're there, you can see the other side at all times. So you might say to yourself, well, how can this be something that is scary to be out in the middle of this lake with a boat and a storm? Well, here's one unique thing that's going to cause a whole lot of problems. The Sea of Galilee sits 700 feet below sea level. Now, we're not used to being below sea level. You think, well, we're here in the North Georgia Mountains, and so there's some elevation here. You know, we might be 1,000 feet around here or something. And as you go toward the beach and toward the Gulf, you get to sea level. But being below sea level, it seems like it would be strange. Not only are they below sea level, but the surrounding mountains around are like 3,000 and 4,000 feet high. And so it creates some very unique topography that are going to cause all sorts of weather patterns, because you've got this bowl down here where all this wind is kind of rushing down and through. Oh, one other thing that was neat as I was reading up on the Sea of Galilee, it's the primary water source for Israel today. So they've got kind of a dam situation set up, and they release water down the Jordan River, similar to how we do the Chattahoochee. And, people in Alabama are super concerned about, Lake Lanier and the Chattahoochee and letting water go. It's the same thing for the Sea of Galilee. It's a freshwater lake that's fed by the Jordan River that comes down from the mountains, and the water flows down to the southern part of Israel. So it's not the only source, but it's the primary source. But here's where the problem is. All right, when you're on this lake, there's a lot of warm water and warm things that are down there, and you've got on the top of these mountains cold air that can kind of rush from the eastern side of things down to the sea. And so it's going to create some very violent conditions. Violent being like if you're on the lake and there are 10-foot waves, but not super unusual. You think about a 10-foot tall wave, go back to look at that boat. 10 feet tall and a boat that's not big. You got maybe 12, 15 people in the boat, and water's coming over the side of it. It's going to create some very scary situations, and those type storms tend to come up over and over and over again. And so when you're out fishing on the Sea of Galilee, that's just part of the hazards of doing business. And here they're in this situation where they're going to find out just how much they believe in God, just how much faith they have in Jesus. And we see starting out, as you remember the text, and we read these first three verses, when you start out, everything's pretty good, isn't it? When it comes to having faith in Jesus, Jesus had been, if you read the text and you go back to the first part of Matthew 4, or Mark 4, he'd just gone over the parable of the sower, and he talks about, the kind of soils that are there, and the kind of people that are accepting or rejecting the Word of God, and people are listening to him. This is early on in Jesus' ministry. And they're wanting to follow Jesus. Jesus is saying, let's go into the other side. And people are getting in their boats, and they're wanting to go across with him. Other boats were with him, it said in verse 36. Here are people that are demonstrating that they have some faith in Jesus and what's going on. They want to be around Jesus, and they want to be with Jesus. And having this faith to follow Jesus, I'll say it again, it's the most important thing you can possess. Now, we don't have to go back and read Hebrews 11:6, but do you remember what the text said? That without faith, it's impossible to please God. You can't find a person that God is happy with that doesn't have faith. It's an impossibility. It's impossible to please God without it. But you got to believe that He is, and that He's a rewarder of those that diligently seek Him. I mean, you think about how faith is an indispensable part of that. Go back and look at all the miracles that Jesus did. I got Luke chapter 8 and verse 48 up there. Do you remember the story with the woman that reached out and touched Jesus? And power went out of him and he felt it? And you know, after that exchange with this woman where he wants to know who's touched him and that she was healed by her touch, as Jesus said here, he said a number of times in the text, he said, "Go in peace, your faith has made you whole." What made her whole? Well, touching me has made you whole. Well, yes and no. Why did she reach out and touch Jesus? Because she believed something would happen if she could get close enough to touch him. And sure enough, it did. She was made well because of her faith in him. And all these things are written to show us an example that our relationship to God is tied to him based on our faith, our belief in Jesus, our idea that God is going to be there for us and I can trust in God and that my faith rests in Him. And yet, for much of our lives, do we really ever have our faith tested? I mean, for the most part, we don't. I mean, you read these three verses, there's nothing really happening in the first two that provide much of a test of faith. I mean, you think about Jesus feeding the 5,000. People are like, oh, he's feeding us. I'm going to follow him. Jesus is saying some things. He's preaching. He's getting on to the Pharisees. I like that. I'm going to follow him. And for most of our lives, well, your faith isn't really challenged at all. I mean, do you have to exhibit much faith to get up this morning? Crank your car? Come here? No, of course not. I mean, much of our lives are like the calm before the storm, where everything seems to be fine. And what we're going to do? Oh, Jesus is getting in the boat. I'm going to get in the boat too. You know, Jesus is wanting to go to the other side. I'll go to the other side. Because you know what it was like before any of this happened? Nice and calm. Calm waters. See, before a great windstorm arose, there was no wind. And before the waves were breaking in the boat, there were no waves. And here Jesus is saying, follow me. And everybody's saying, yeah, this is great. And if you ask every one of those disciples, do you have faith in me? I guarantee you they would have said, well, of course we do. Man, I got faith in you. But what we're going to find in just a minute is that Jesus says, well, why do you have no faith? Where is your faith? And so here we start to see this very small amount of faith tested. You remember the verses that we read? I got them up here on the board in Mark chapter 4. You know, it said as this storm unfolded, they're in a very uncomfortable situation. Except for Jesus. I mean, Jesus is, it said, asleep on the cushion. But that's not what's happening to the rest of the disciples. The rest of the disciples are getting very concerned. So concerned, as a matter of fact, that they went to wake him up. Okay, they're waking Jesus up. Like, you need to get up. You need to do something. Do you not care that we're perishing? And so what we see here about their faith, before he critiques them and said, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? Our faith is going to manifest itself in a number of ways. All right, how is the disciples' faith shown here so that Jesus can clearly see it or the lack of it? Number one, our lack of faith is demonstrated in our mental anguish. Our mental anguish. Now, we might refer to that as worry or anxiety or stress. You ever been in a situation where you're stressed? You're anxious? You're worried? Of course you have. Most times when I get on an airplane, I feel that way. What's that noise? Why is it bumping? Is this a Boeing 737 MAX 8? You know? What's happening here? And all that, you don't just like, you know, the first sign of trouble, you don't just jump out, you know, of the plane. You start thinking, don't you? Your mind starts going to places maybe your mind shouldn't go. You start worrying about things. You start thinking, well, maybe this isn't going to end well. Maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe this is not, if God intended me to fly, I'd have wings. You start thinking those things. And the disciples are thinking the same thing, right? They're here in this boat, and before they ever wake Jesus up, they're having thoughts. And they're thinking to themselves, this storm is pretty bad. This storm is getting worse. Water's starting to get into the boat. If water keeps getting into the boat, we're going to capsize, or we're going to sink. And if we sink, we're out here in the middle of this sea, and we're not going to be able to make it back to land. And if I'm in the middle of the sea, I'm going to die. And if I die, what's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my kids? I don't want to die right here. All this is going through their mind. They're not saying a word. But they're all thinking it. All right? The number one way your faith is going to manifest itself is in your own thoughts. I mean, are you worried? Are you stressed? Are you struggling internally? You may never say a word to somebody. But inside, God looks at your thoughts and is like, what are you thinking? What are you worried about? Well, I'm extremely worried. And I should be worried because things aren't going how they should be going. This is bad. Nothing about this situation is good. Now, secondly, not only did it manifest itself in some sort of mental thing, but they ended up verbalizing to other people just exactly how afraid they were. I mean, they woke up Jesus. And again, I'm not wanting to suppose here, but I'm assuming that they talked to each other like, should we wake Jesus up? This is bad. You think it's bad? Yeah, I think it's bad. And they're probably yelling because of the waves and the wind. And then they're going like, yes, let's go wake Jesus up. And they wake him up. And notice their attitude as they're talking to him. They're not asking Jesus like, hey, did you check the weather? I mean, this isn't going to, is this things, you think things are going to be okay? No, they have already gone down just some dark path to where they're saying, we're going to die and you're going to sleep. You don't even care that we're dying? And so here they are. I mean, and you think about yourself. Well, do I possess faith? Maybe I'm mentally worried about it. But maybe, not only am I mentally worried, but maybe am I sharing my worries and concerns with other people? I'm engaging others about how concerned I am about everything. And my fears and my problems and my doubts and all those things. And Jesus, I mean, Jesus sees that. Not only that, but implied in their comment, and this is number three, a sure sign of a lack of faith is how we view God in these situations. You know, it wasn't enough that they were wanting to talk to God about it. In general, talking to God's a good thing. But notice how they are almost chastising God for even allowing them to be in this situation, like God somehow doesn't care. Or God isn't aware of what I've got going on. Or maybe God just doesn't have the ability to help me here. How many of us have gone through something in our lives and we think, God is somewhere else. And yet, the whole while, God is right here. And He's standing there. Or He's sitting there. Or in our case, the ageless, timeless, eternal God is doing what He's always done, which is watching over all of us. And not a single hair of our head is uncounted. And not a single thing happens to the birds or animals in His creation without His awareness. And somehow we think, in spite of our relationship to God, our confession to Him, our belief in Him, that somehow in our most challenging situations, God is nowhere to be found. You see, sometimes we see our faith come out in situations like this, where we attack God and His willingness or ability to help. Now, let me say this as an aside here as you think about how faith shows itself and manifests itself. I say this as an aside. Our faith has to be tested in this physical life. All right? It's the only reality you and I exist in, even though the spiritual reality is real. But our faith can't be tested other than things like being in a boat that you think is about to sink. It has to be situations where you don't know if I'm going to be able to make money next month. I don't know if I'm going to be able to live because of the cancer in my body. I don't know what's going to happen to me. God allows those situations to exist because it is the only way my faith can ever be tested. It can't be tested unless you get in a boat and experience a problem. And so, again, none of us are going to be in that situation. All right? I mean, we are acutely prepared these days with life jackets and other things and boats inside our boats that'll help us in case one boat fails. I mean, we do that sort of thing. And we jump out of a plane and we got a parachute and we got a backup parachute. Like, we're going to be okay. And so it might not be this situation. But let me tell you, God is going to put you in a situation where He's going to see if you believe in Him or not. And brethren, that is a place where most often Christians, after singing that song over and over again, "I'll go anywhere with Jesus," we fall flat on our face at the first sign of trouble. And we act in very unchristian ways, and we do things that are not befitting someone that is supposed to have faith. What does faith look like in this story? What would Jesus have preferred to see? Well, I'll give you an example. All right? Now, this is a picture of someone else's kid. Because if I put a picture of my kid, the cuteness would overwhelm this whole room. And that's all you'd be thinking about. So we put just a normal baby up there. And what is that baby doing? That baby's sleeping. And that baby's smiling. And that baby's happy. You know what? I mean, that's kind of what God is looking for in situations like this. God wants someone that is comfortable enough with the situation that, like Jesus, they could say, "You know what? I'm real tired. I think I'm just going to take a nap." I mean, it makes no sense to anyone other than a Christian to face challenges with the calm, contented view that an infant has. You know, how many times have you gone with your children and you're driving 8 hours, maybe you're driving at night, you're going on some long journey. I mean, is your child in their car seat looking over at another child thinking, "I just don't like the way he's handling the car here. There's a lot of traffic out here Labor Day weekend. I mean, they need to keep an eye on the road a little bit better. What is Dad doing on his phone?" I mean, they're not thinking that at all. What is a child doing in their seat? "Well, I'm just going to go to sleep." They're not worried or stressed or concerned about your ability to take care of them. They have 100% complete trust in you, whether you've earned it or not. And that's the type relationship that God wants to see in us, that our faith will manifest itself in such a way where Jesus doesn't look at us in a situation and say, "Why in the world are you afraid? Why do you doubt, you of little faith?" I want to leave you with this. I want to look at three things about what real trust and real faith looks like. How could the disciples in this situation have done something that pleased Jesus? I will tell you, number one, they could have done what Jesus said and said, "Well, if God's going to sleep on this, well, I'm just going to go to sleep too. And I'm just going to lay here by Jesus." Not a one of them did. Not a one of them said, "Well, I guess it's going to work out, because if Jesus was concerned, then I'd be concerned. But Jesus is not concerned, so I'm not going to be concerned." That didn't happen. So what could have happened that would have demonstrated to God some idea of saving faith? I want to submit to you three things. And again, faith is so broad, we could cover a billion of them. But number one, I want to share with you, faith is the absence of fear. All right? Faith is the absence of fear. Notice what Jesus said in verse 40 of Mark 4 at the end of it. We referenced it several times. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Those things go together. You being afraid implies you have no faith. All right, now that's a little hard for us to understand. Because somehow we want to be people of faith, but still take on everything inside us that allows us to be fearful because we feel like it's justified. And yet I got a picture up here of Daniel in the lion's den. Now, again, we don't know exactly how all this played out. We know a little bit before and a little bit after. But what do you think life was like for Daniel in the lion's den when he was punished because of his faith in God and his continued petitions to Jehovah, and the king was going to throw him in the lion's den? What do you think Daniel was doing as he was being let down in the lion's den? Do you think he was screaming like a little girl? Do you think he was clawing his way like, "Do not let me down in this pit"? Do you think he was cowering in the corner? Do you think he was looking for rocks or sticks to defend himself with? What attitude do you think Daniel had when he was being let down in the lion's den? Well, I don't know. This painting kind of portrays he's standing in the middle of lions, and he's got some faith and piety toward God. I imagine that's the kind of thing. Because the next morning when the king rushes in there, he's like, Daniel, are you alive? Daniel's like, yeah, I'm just down here. God shut their mouths. God save me. Because I did nothing wrong to you, king. I've done nothing wrong. God vindicated me. So I'm okay. You get the sense that this man is like the consummate example of faith. He's even mentioned, not verbatim, but in Hebrews chapter 11, and this, you know, the ideas of the annals of faith. I mean, it said those who stop the mouths of lions. How do they stop the mouths of lions? Through their faith. How would Daniel's faith have been demonstrated? By God putting him down the lion's den and him just being like, well, I'm not going to be afraid of this. For most of us, we would be like the disciples, terrified out of our minds. But yet this great man of faith is demonstrating his faith because he's not afraid of anything. How do we apply that to our lives? Faith being the absence of fear. All right, you're going to be in situations where you are uncertain of the outcome. You are not going to know, and you're not going to be able to know what the future is going to hold for you. But what are you going to do? Are you going to embrace the negative possibilities, or are you going to say to yourself, I trust in God, so why would I be afraid? Now, it's hard to put into practice because next time you get on an airplane, you're going to think, well, what's going to happen here? Or whatever your little airplane thing is. All right, it may be totally something else. But can you find complete absence of fear? If you can, you have filled your life with faith in trusting that God is overall and God's going to take care of you. And yet, there's another thing related to faith. What does real trust look like? This is an important number two. Real faith, all right, understands and accepts all outcomes. All right, Christian faith is not the kind of blind faith that says, well, let me tell you what's going to happen. I know what God's going to do. God's going to cure my cancer, man. It's going to be gone. I'm going to wake up tomorrow. I got faith in God that He's going to make it right. That's not how faith works. All right, faith is based on evidence. And I think we can clearly see that even men of faith, their stories didn't always end well. I've got Daniel chapter 3 and verse 17 up here. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I want to reference their attitude just for a minute when they approached this situation where Nebuchadnezzar said, well, because you won't bow down and worship my idol, I'm going to throw you into this fiery furnace. All right? You're going to be cremated alive here. And that's not an exciting thing. Let me say this as an aside. The reason I wanted to reference Daniel is that song we sang, Anywhere with Jesus, that was written by a woman named Jesse Brown, who married a preacher whose last name was Pound. So if you see in there, Jesse Brown Pounds. She was a famous poet. And it's one of those weird songs that somebody said, I got a catchy tune, but there are no words to it. So someone wrote the music and mailed it to her. She was a poet in the late 1800s. And they said, hey, why don't you put a hymn to this? And they had heard just a very strong sermon about how Christ is supposed to be the captain of our lives and we're supposed to trust in Him. And the preacher was hammering on how people like in Daniel trusted God. And so that's why they wrote that hymn. Anywhere with Jesus I can safely go. And you can see how these people had that kind of faith that if God is with us, man, I'll go wherever. In Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so that our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But, even if He does not, let it be known to you, O king, we're not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. All right, so look, here's the reality of faith. It isn't just a happy path to paradise where the disciples are like, I know this boat's not going to sink because Jesus wouldn't let it sink. Sometimes God's going to let you be tossed into the furnace. Sometimes people are sawn in two. Sometimes people are martyred for the sake of Christ. Sometimes, like Stephen, you're just doing a good job helping the early church and preaching the gospel, and you get hit with a bunch of rocks. Okay, faith accepts and understands all outcomes. Faith isn't blind to the realities. But faith still trusts in God to do the right thing, even though it may seem like this is a really bad situation. Now, theirs worked out. Theirs worked out in an amazing way where they said, hey, didn't we throw three people in there? They said, yeah, now there's four. And one looks like the Son of Man. I mean, it's like Jesus is right there with them. Like, their faith was instantly rewarded. True faith accepts all outcomes as okay. Number three, and finally this morning, what real faith looks like, faith is patient. Faith is patient and not one that demands immediate gratification. You know, nothing would have been better for us, I think, if we were in that boat than to think I could just hit an eject button and the whole situation dissipates and goes away. You know, I don't think anything would have been more stressful than thinking this is just going to go on forever. And that's how we are in life. I want my problems resolved. I want the situation fixed. I want to go to the doctor and them give me a pill and I just wake up tomorrow and things are better. I want to lose my job. I want to get one tomorrow. We don't want these protracted problems. And yet, how many people who demonstrated just the most precious thing they could have, their faith, in Hebrews 11 it says, they did not receive the thing that was promised. They never received it. Abraham never owned Canaan in the sense that God had promised that they would. Okay? Moses never entered the promised land, even though he gave everything up in service to God. All those prophets that prophesied about the coming Messiah and God elevating Zion to this high mountain, they never saw it. That apart from us, they would not be made perfect. They demonstrated faith not because God gave into their demands, but because they were willing to be patient to see that which was unseen. All right, so when you and I go through things in such a way that says, I don't need an answer today, all we're showing is a glorified faith that we can be in this boat rocking and rolling as long as God sees fit. Brethren, the best thing you can have, the most special thing you can take home with you, is faith. And if you have it this morning, it is the key that unlocks everything to your relationship to God. Through faith, you can be transported back to the cross, where that sacrifice that we talked about, it's like you're there. And it's like Jesus saying, I'm dying for you. And you can see His blood and His death and His burial and resurrection, and you can participate in it. Not through your own physical death, but through faith saying to yourself, I'm going to put away my old way of life, and I'm going to start something new today. And you participate in that death through that repentance and that faith and your burial and baptism, and all those things come together through faith in the operation of God, and God wipes all your sins away. And you start today a new creature. And that's what faith is all about. You won't look any different on the outside to anybody else. But through faith in the promises of God, you can trust that God has done what He said He's going to do. He's going to take everything in life, all your sins, and put them on His own shoulders. And He's going to bear your burdens and bear your iniquities. I mean, what a great thing. We could talk more about it. I could talk the rest of the day. But let me tell you, I want you to be a person that faces life with faith. That's what matters to God. That's what's going to save you. And if you don't have that faith, you're going to be lost. Look, if we can help you, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing a song to encourage you.